News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 2nd of July, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. Just to make Rob happy, it's 81 degrees. Under skies, the windows, the shades are closed, so I can't see what kind
they
are.
Well, open them.
But it is 81 degrees already today, and that makes it a beautiful day.
It'll be hot and humid
in my neighborhood.
I actually like that weather report. Under skies.
Under skies.
It's nice. Nice and generic. You can't get in trouble that way.
That's exactly right. All right. Except for the temperature, we could use that same forecast all year long. All right. You know the numbers. Give us a call. 222-1180 in the 585 area code. If you're outside that, it's 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, all you Verizon Wireless customers, star 1180. I wonder if that works all across the country or just locally.
What, the star?
The star 1180.
I think the star is just local within the Verizon local network here.
Too bad.
Isn't that one of the deals about cell phone networks is it's all local?
Yeah, they're all local.
To a point.
Sorta. All right, we have a great story to start out with this week. It's time to take the blue pill. There is a security researcher named Joanna Rutkowska, using an internal AMD, the AMD chip, the AMD 64-bit chip, and also the Intel 64-bit chip have on-chip virtualization. What a virtualization thing means is you can create inside a computer multiple instances of that computer. So, for example, on a server, I could create an instance of a server for you, an instance of a server for me, an instance of a server for Dave, one for Steve, one for Rob, and they would all think they all owned the system individually. They would think they had all the resources and did all the work, and they just had their very own little machine. What that lets you do is, if, for example, Dave crashes his machine...
Which I like doing, playing around with beta software.
Exactly. It doesn't affect any of the rest of us. The hypervisor, it's called, can reboot that system, and it all moves on. And nobody knows anybody else's system is in there unless you go in through what's called the hypervisor, which controls all of them. This is built right into the chip. Well, this Joanna Rutkowska uses the virtualization that's built into AMD's 64-bit chips and created an ultra-thin hypervisor that lets someone take complete control of the underlying operating system. Now, remember, unless you are running that hypervisor, you don't know that other machine is there. So this is the ultimate in stealth. Antivirus software won't know it's there because it's running essentially on a different machine.
It thinks it's a whole different...
Nothing else, nothing knows it's there. This works on every 64-bit system, including Vista, because it doesn't touch the operating system. It operates at a level below the operating system. Now, currently, it's only out for AMD 64-bit chips. Soon, it'll be out for the Intel 64-bit chips as well. Right now, nobody has a clue, including the researcher, how to detect these things.
You have to run that hypervisor all the time.
If you're running one hypervisor of your own,
another one.
You don't necessarily know there's another one running on the machine.
Yeah, could be multi.
You wouldn't know it. There's no way to tell.
That's bad.
Yeah. That's kind of disturbing, don't you think?
Yeah.
We're going to follow this as it goes along, but right now I might suggest that unless you have a pressing need... buying a 64-bit system may not be to your advantage
like the old,
at the moment.
Anna Janeway's, you know, you get all this stuff, and you can be all dressed up, but if there's nothing that can really take advantage of it, why bother?
Right.
I mean, you know, the software is still trying to catch up to some of the technology that was around from last year. because they just can't write the code fast enough and test it and get it out there.
Yeah, the real high-end 3D modeling and Hollywood, you know, movie production, you know, CAD programs, that type of stuff can take advantage of it, but not much else.
No, exactly.
Right, but those systems, you know, could get infected. How would you even know?
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't.
All right, our first on that pleasant note, our first caller is John from Webster, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Dave, thanks for the help on the ladder. Worked out great.
Oh, good.
I have had for several years an IBM ThinkPad 600E, which I use in real estate, and it's worked out very well. Unfortunately, the case broke because I took a tumble on the ice this past winter, and I decided to replace it. When I look at just the myriad of notebook computers out there, it's very, very confusing. And when I consider trying and kind of mesh that with the application, again, I work in real estate, so I use PowerPoint presentations. I need very quick, I need speed because of internet access. And I look at all the brands and the tremendous range in price, I don't know where to go. And so I'm looking for some advice, I think, maybe on not necessarily the brands, but what I might be looking for in that $800 to $1,000 range to optimize my use.
All right, here's the key thing.
Well, that's really the low end of laptops. You're not going to get anything much fast for that.
Right. You're going to have to, you definitely want 512 meg of memory. More is better, even in a laptop. New standard is usually an 80 gig hard drive, which for a laptop is fine. But the other key thing, though, is the graphics. That's your other thing, that when you're doing these PowerPoint presentations and that type of stuff, or trying to go on the web and searching various houses, and they can have the links, you know, that you can take the virtual tour. The video memory is crucial also, because in there is, you know, is how well it's going to flow when you're doing it, even over the internet. So your two key things are basically the memory in the machine and the video. Those are the two key driving forces.
And above all of those is the warranty.
Yes.
Whatever you buy, wherever you buy it, if you're buying a laptop, take a very close look at the warranty. Because as you know, you drop them, they break. How do you get it fixed?
That's one of the big things a lot of especially laptop owners don't quite understand is if you drop the computer and it breaks, that's not covered under the warranty. The warranty is for defect in materials or the circuit boards themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Dropping it is considered accidental abuse, not covered under warranty. So a lot of times you want to check your homeowner's insurance policy and make sure there's an electronics rider. So then your homeowner's insurance would cover such a repair. But in a lot of cases with we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, with the realtors and people who are on the road all the time, you might want to take a look at the Panasonic Toughbook series, which are extra rugged cases.
Yeah.
They don't look as pretty, but they're extra rugged cases and can survive more abuse without being damaged.
Yeah, and the commercials, they run over them with trucks and everything. And
yeah, because I had one that came in. All the arrow keys moving sideways were gone on this laptop. The back corner was cracked, so you had to carefully open that up.
Yeah, you drop it on a corner and you take out three or four parts, the bottom case, the top case, the screen.
Yeah, so you might want to look along that lines, Jen.
What about the video memory? Is there any minimum that would be reasonable?
You really want 128 meg anyway.
And
minimum.
Stay away from shared video if you're doing high-end stuff like, you know, movie
virtualizations. Well, all he's really doing is PowerPoint, so that's not a problem. But
if you're doing movies of houses, walkthroughs of floor plans,
right. Talking about, too, I think, Steve, is where part of your memory in the machine is also used for the video.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. All of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Well, there's an interesting rumor going around, and it is only a rumor.
Oh, this kill switch.
So far.
Yeah.
The rumor is that Microsoft is turning their Windows Guaranteed WGA, whatever that stands for. Wait, I should just go look at our poll this week.
The Windows Genuine Advantage.
That's it. Windows Genuine Advantage In the fall, right now you can just, that's the thing that you get, you download with the latest set of updates. It checks your system and nags you if you do not have a legitimate copy of Windows.
Or that's fair. Many times if you do.
And many times if you do. Now, that's fair if you don't. That's fair. They would like to sell you an operating system. I don't have a problem with it doing that. It's annoying, but oh well, I guess. However, in the fall, you don't get a choice not to install it. If it's not installed, you get a 30-day warning. And when the 30 days are up, if you have not installed the Windows Genuine Advantage, Windows will stop working. That apparently is the report online from somebody who actually talked to Microsoft tech support, and they told them that. Microsoft spokesperson has said as the WGA notifications program expands, customers may be required to participate. Microsoft is gathering feedback in select markets to learn how it can best meet its customers' needs and will keep customers informed of any changes to the program. If it becomes mandatory, Microsoft could prevent Windows from working if it decides that your copy is not genuine, if you are a thief. I can't honestly believe they're actually going to do that. I truly don't believe that.
Yeah, and why do they have to keep checking, though? Naive, why can't it be once then be done with? I mean, this bowl of that it's got to check every time you're logging in, that's ridiculous.
Well, the problem with it right now is that it does check. It talks back to Microsoft every time you
every time you turn on the machine.
So that's a real problem. This is just a rumor. Let's not get crazy. Well,
this has been fairly common over the last few years in a lot of programs, high-end programs, some of the Adobe suites, big programs like Maya and Quark. They will check on the network, and if you're running the same copy on two machines, it will shut one of them down.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now Microsoft is taking that to the next level. I'd like to see someone read through the original license agreement for Windows and see if there's a clause in there about we can change this license agreement anytime we want.
Yes, there is.
Requiring you to add this more stuff?
Yes. Yeah. And they basically say without notification and anytime we want and take a hike.
So all right. They had lawyers involved.
Yes, they did. Our next caller is John from Gates. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, I have an external hard drive, and I'm running XP Pro. The computer was recognizing it as drive E. Then somewhere along the line, I had a thumb drive in there in the mix. Something got mixed up, and now the computer thinks the external hard drive is drive F.
Yeah.
And I've written some little, C++ utilities that look for files on drive E. And so either I've got to go and change all those, or preferably get my hard drive back as drive E.
Well, you got to do is if you reboot the machine with that thumb drive out and the external hard drive hooked up, then it should come on as E.
There's some sort of random order that Windows assigns removable drives to, and you may not get the same letter every time. There is a way in is it Disk Manager somewhere in there drive to be a specific letter all the time.
Yeah, you can assign it a specific letter.
So then you can go to the properties of the flash drive and say start at E or start at F and move on.
Yeah.
And on your hard drive, start at D, end at D, so it always is D or whichever letters you want it to be.
Okay. So where would I find it?
On the control panel under administrative tools under computer management.
Uh-huh.
You'll find a disk management choice called disk management.
Okay.
And if you right-click on any one of the drives, you can change the drive letter and the path and make it always be what you want.
It's very, very important to not mess with C.
Yeah.
Leave C alone.
Yeah. Stay away from C.
The key thing is though, do it with the external hard drive turned on and hooked up. Because then it'll show as the device, and then you can select that and say make this.
And make sure that thumb drive's not in.
Yep.
Right.
We've run into a bunch of, I think they were Dell laptops, where the main internal hard drive came up as D for something instead of C.
Huh? Yeah.
It was weird. So then when they plug their iPod in, the iPod picks the first free letter and comes up as C.
Yeah.
And then won't sync with iTunes, because iTunes doesn't want to sync on C. It gets confused. So we have to force the iPod to go to a different letter, because we haven't figured out how to easily force the hard drive back to C without reformatting and repartitioning.
Right.
How could the main hard drive be D?
Because when they first create the drive, the drive image, there's some image file. There's a partition.
Yeah.
It's usually small, but usually that doesn't show up. They push that to the back.
Somebody screwed
right.
up.
And that, yeah. and that when you do need that, it shows up as D. Yeah. And your main
right.
hard drive
right.
is always
right.
C.
Usually.
Usually.
Right. Right.
Okay. So if you have a Dell laptop and you're having trouble with your iPod, you know, check what letter your hard drive is. That could be the problem.
Yes, it could. Next caller, Dave from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a gateway with an AMD processor, 1.1 gig, about 5 or 6 years old, at least 768K in memory. It might be a gig. I don't recall offhand. XP, all the updates are in. I run SpySweeper and McAfee. Google Earth crashes my machine. I have a 64 meg NVIDIA graphics processor display card. Click on it loads. You know, Google Earth installs fine. You click the desktop icon, and it reboots the machine.
Is there anything else that does that?
Nope.
There's two things that could be causing it. One, 64 meg is
kind of low,
kind of minimal for Google Earth. But the other thing is that it may well be that you need an updated version of Java and Flash. And
I think I got the latest ones.
How about your video memory? Has that been the video card? Have you updated the drivers on that?
Yeah, the first thing I did was made sure all my drivers were updated. Yes. I was wondering if 64 meg might be the problem. It's just not.
It's low.
It might be. That's pretty low for something like Google Earth.
Yeah, I usually, you know, we'll start folks out with 128 meg. I mean, they're not that expensive, you know, 128 meg card.
That's where I was going to go. I just didn't want to spend that money unless.
Yeah, no. Well, it'll be a win-win all the way around. Everything right. will, you know, display faster because now you're adding twice the amount of video memory
right.
to cache those items.
Right. Okay, Google Earth, by the way, is a pretty nifty program. If you go to earth.google.com, it'll tell you all about it. But I would suggest upping your video memory, see what happens. Going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco. If you want to find us on Google Earth, you certainly can. Oh, one neat thing about Google Earth before we go. No, I got to talk about this. One neat thing about Google Earth, it's now available under Linux. I'm very excited about this. It used to be a PC-only program.
And then they made the Mac version.
And then they made the Mac version, which, and now they've finally made a...
That probably made the Linux version easier.
Which, exactly. And it was just a matter of reshuffling things to get the Linux version. But it's now available for the three major operating systems, and it's hard to get niftier than Google Earth. Check it out at earth.google.com. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Whams. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Well, I'm sad to say that the Senate has rejected an attempt to make the internet neutral. Internet neutrality, which aims at preventing network operators from charging an additional fee to certain websites who want to get quicker and more efficient communications for their users, failed to gain a majority in the committee, which was deadlocked. However, the issue will be examined by the Senate during its debate on telecom reform, although a date for that has not yet been set. Basically, this bill was supposed to make it illegal for internet providers, whether they be any whatever format
Google,
they use,
whatever,
to be able. Well, mostly this is for the backbone people, Sprint, Verizon, AT&T, things like that, Comcast. They can. Without this bill, they'd be able to charge their competitors more money to get
up there.
The competitors' traffic on their network. So, for example, I'm on DSL and I want to get on Google, and Google's off AT&T. AT&T could charge Frontier more money to let those of us on Frontier get to Google. Well, if that starts, it's just it's going to end up killing the internet.
That whole slippery slope thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're hoping that that our government will keep the little folks in mind this one time and make sure that the net stays neutral for all of us. We'll keep following that. In the meantime, feel free to write to your Congress individuals and tell them how much net neutrality means to you. Our next caller is Dave from Greece, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Good show.
Thank you.
A couple weeks ago, I took a couple days vacation so I could run the security tango.
Good.
And I got that shredder thing, the CD shredder or whatever it was.
CW
shredder, right.
Right. But I think you said on your website to run it in safe mode. But when I go in safe mode, that and SpyBot don't show up.
When you're in safe mode, you're in a special user, admin user. When you install SpyBot and Adaware as a regular user, it installs it into that user folder.
But the key
so you have to manually go into your program files and find those icons.
But Dave, didn't it work correctly, though, in regular mode?
Yeah, it did.
Then you don't have to worry about running it in safe mode.
Well, I tell
folks to run it in safe mode if it, by chance, and it will happen with some spyware programs that are on your machine, that's why we tell folks to run it in safe mode, is because some of the spyware can lock the machine up.
Okay, well,
because of the other services running.
I did run it in regular mode.
No, then you're fine. We only put that in there because it...
And that only handles one virus, the cool web search. So
yeah.
If it ran okay, you're good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I was a little concerned, but I guess I'm not now.
There you go.
I just burned 2 days of vacation for nothing.
Yeah, but you had fun otherwise, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
You weren't at work.
That's true.
There's
bad
that.
Day, bad day at work is a bad day at work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. All right, what?
Uh-oh.
Our next someone take Dave's microphone. Carl is going to say the dirty word on the radio. Welcome, Carl. What's your question?
How you doing? I'm running Windows Millennium.
Ah!
And I've done the Security Tango, and that helped me out tremendously.
Good.
This is probably about 4 years old. It's an AMD Geron processor. I'm not a real computer nut, so my son that moved away used to like keep things pretty clean. So
right.
We've had problems. It's cleaned out a lot of stuff, but it's still very, very slow.
That's normal for Emmy.
How much RAM do you have?
I mean, a lot slower than it used to be. It's about 4 years old, but I mean, it's so much slower. There's still a lot of free space. It's got 128 megabyte of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of like Registry Mechanic. You know, they put a lot of games on there. Some have been taken off. Is that something that could be slowing it down?
Oh, it depends on what's being in the startup menu and everything else.
Where is it slow? Opening a window, running a program, loading a website?
Running regular applications, but, you know, most of the time when we're trying to use Google, and I've got Firefox on there, I don't use Internet Explorer anymore.
Good.
And using Firefox, but a lot of times, even when, you know, cable lights on, data's coming through,
mm-hmm.
It's just very slow. I mean, sometimes we were just like...
Now, you're running Adaware and SpyBot also?
I've gone through the Security Tango, and I try and do it, you know...
It's very possible, Carl, that with all the stuff your kids put on it, there's a bunch of stuff running in the background.
Yeah. How many? Are there a lot of items down the taskbar?
Right.
What's that?
Are there a lot of items down in the taskbar?
Probably like 9 or 10.
Yeah, you
yep,
can probably
you
get
go.
Rid of 7 of them.
What's
If you can probably get rid of 7 of them.
Okay.
There's a bunch of stuff that runs. I suspect they've got at least one Instant Messenger, if not 3 or 4.
There's one.
They've probably got a couple of Game Spy type programs running in the background. These are programs that check on the availability of various servers.
Mm-hmm.
They may have some games actually install their own servers so that multiple people can play online.
Okay.
Those may be running. You really kind of need to get it to somebody and have them check it out. I don't suggest randomly turning stuff off.
Yeah.
So take it to a reputable dealer, have them take a look around and have them remove all of the vestiges of all of that game stuff. Alternately, of course, take a sledgehammer to it and buy a good computer with a really terrific system on it.
If there's nothing much on there you want, you can always erase the hard drive and install Windows from scratch.
Right.
And that would make it just as fast as it theoretically was when he bought it.
Right, but if you have your own documents and data and stuff on it, then you at the very least want to back up twice. But those are the things that you're going to have to do. I'd suggest taking it to a reputable vendor, have them take a look at it, and see what needs to be done to keep it clean. All right, our next caller, Paul, from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Okay. When I shut down my laptop, every once in a while I see this item come up, and it says Thorcon Wind Glass.
Sorry, say that slowly again.
Capital T-H-O-R, capital C-O-N-N. Capital W N D, capital C L A S S. And I have no idea what it is. And it's not always there. You know, when you're turning off my Dell laptop.
Oh, you've got a Dell laptop?
Yes.
All right. That's a lovely question. When was the last time you.
Yeah, did any maintenance on that, like for spyware and all that?
I do it every Saturday.
You're running Adware and SpyBot?
Yes.
Did that come up with anything in a search?
Search there, I didn't understand it. So it says, you know, see this. And that was when I was extra busy.
Now, one of the things that Windows can do is it downloads updates in the background. And when you shut down, it will install them for you. It may be something like that popping
up. Do you run Outlook?
Yes, not Outlook Express.
You run Outlook?
Yes.
Okay, it's Outlook. Outlook is trying to find the email server out on the internet. It hasn't, trying to find it. It's talking to it, it's dealing with it, and it has not yet let go of it when you shut down.
May have a send mail on quit. Yeah. Preference set up in your Outlook. So when you're quitting, it tries to send an email that's
right.
Waiting.
Just to double check.
Right. That's Outlook. And there's the easiest thing to do to test this theory for yourself.
Right.
Next time you go to shut down the machine, shut down Outlook first.
I will do that.
Wait a few minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Just to make sure it actually does shut down.
Right.
You know, don't click, right. Give it a few minutes.
I understand.
And then shut down Windows and see if the Thorcon Wind Class doesn't show up, and that will tell you that's where the problem is. That is a piece of Outlook, and if you're running Outlook, it's pretty likely that's what happens. Outlook, depending on where it's going and what it's doing, it is a little slow.
It's greedy.
It is. And so we find often enough that it's one of the things that makes your system slow, and it in itself is thick. It's like molasses. It runs slowly.
Yep.
And
okay.
So I would be very careful.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, that settles the confusion that I had. So I thank you, gentlemen, very much.
You're welcome.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much. All right, our next caller is Drew from Perry, New York. Welcome, Drew. What's your question?
I have a question. I have a laptop that I run wirelessly.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning of the week or earlier in the week, I got a message on my screen that said that a new wireless network was detected and that asked for what I wanted to name this network, home, away, or whatever. Ever since I've done that and named it home, now I've got limited or no connectivity.
Yeah. Was this a network that you purchased and set up in your house?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not your neighbor's wireless network. It just happened to discover.
Right. No, it's my own. And it's been running fine up until this point.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. You had a wireless network in your home.
Yes.
Then one day you turned on your laptop and it found a new one.
That's what it said.
You didn't set up that new one.
No, I did not.
Your neighbor did.
Now
you're trying to connect to your neighbor's wireless, but it's either they've locked it up. The connection is so...
It's just barely in range.
Yeah, right.
I'm sitting right next to my Linksys.
That's yours,
yeah. Pay attention, okay. Drew. Okay. We're not talking about your Linksys anymore.
Okay.
The new network you detected is somebody else's.
In the neighborhood.
And you're now trying to connect to it.
Okay, how do I stop it from trying to connect to that one?
There you go.
You've got to go into the Linksys connection.
Your wireless network connection in the taskbar. And
yeah,
that will list all of the... networks that it can see at the moment,
and you got to yours is going to be listed there. And
when I do that, I only get one, and that's mine.
Select that, and then say connect to that.
What does it say the strength of the signal is?
Excellent, because I'm sitting 2 feet away from it.
Yeah.
Well, then definitely connect to that one, because what's clearly happened is you connected to someone else's network.
Yep.
and then they locked you out of it. And your system is still trying to connect to it, even though it's no longer there, which would kind of explain why you can't get a connection.
Somewhere in that list of wireless connections, there's a preference for preferred wireless connections. The way the wireless is supposed to work is if you go into like a coffee bar and connect to this network, it remembers that. So the next time you go to that coffee bar, it connects to that network.
And you go.
I took my laptop, I took it to work to make sure that it was still working. And it connected into that wireless connection there with no problem, and it also listed both wireless, mine as a choice and the one at work.
Right. See, it listed yours even though yours wasn't there.
So there's a preference in there somewhere to delete the ones you don't want to connect to.
Delete right. That. So even your when you go to work, delete your home one. So once you get home,
it'll find it again,
and you should be good there.
And make sure it is yours. I know we're running out of time, but you should name your network something more intuitive than home. Every network company, Linksys, Netgear, Belkin, whatever, their router is named Linksys, Netgear, Belkin, whatever. So wherever you go, there's a Linksys network. Is it mine? Is it my neighbor's? Is it across the street?
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick on Soundbites.
C's to Max. These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Well, it appears to be WGA, Windows Genuine Advantage Day here on Soundbites. Microsoft has released a new version of the WGA. They released it on Tuesday. And they talked on their website, and Steve's going to put this link up because it's ludicrously huge.
It's long.
It's a Microsoft. F9219. Who cares? They've detailed how to remove the anti-piracy software. The updated WGA notifications package includes changes that respond to the criticism Microsoft has faced over the software. It no longer checks in with Microsoft after each restart, for example. Who knows what else it does, but at least it doesn't do that. Microsoft representative said, "Our customers have told us that they were disappointed with their WGA notifications experience, and we have made an effort to improve that with this update."
Is that a politer way of saying disappointed as porked off?
People screaming at them over the phone means they're disappointed in their experience.
And they couldn't put in that four-letter words and everything else that they were being called.
Right. Microsoft faced a lot of heat over this WGA notification thing, and particularly because it delivered a pre-release version of the tool alongside security fixes. And many people feel that this has turned them into unsuspecting guinea pigs. WGA notifications was found to ping a Microsoft server after each system restart, which is a behavior that the company did not disclose. While Microsoft is responding to some of the criticism, it said it will continue to distribute WGA notifications via the automatic updates feature as a high priority update, even though it's not actually a security update. For the first time, however, they're offering guidelines on how to remove the WGA notifications. Previously, they had told us it couldn't be uninstalled.
Yeah.
Apparently, they were wrong about that.
They didn't want another lawsuit.
You can't remove it using add or remove programs, but it can be done. And if you want step-by-step removal instructions for the old version, not the new version, the old version, check the Soundbites website. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And Steve has it up as one of our links. In the meantime, we will go back to the phone and talk to Phil from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Listen, I'm in the market for a new computer, but I was told to wait until the new Windows came out, Vista, and the new chip came out, and that the new chip is not going to work with integrated parts and all this stuff. But dates keep getting pushed back, and I need a computer. So.
Yeah, if you wait for the next better thing, you'll never buy a computer.
Yeah, there's always something better coming.
Because I heard rumors on the horizon that Vista is going to be delayed even later into next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't wait if I were you.
So I go around, I start checking out different markets for a new computer. Mm-hmm. Everybody's trying to push this dual-core processor.
Yeah, that is...
How cool are those?
Those are very, very cool.
I'm running one of those right now. I'm running an AMD 3800 dual-core.
I was always told that stay away from doublers.
This is completely different. This is actually built into the hardware. It truly is two chips in one.
Two processors with two level two caches.
Okay, so it's not going to overheat on me. It's not
A different problem. Yes, it will overheat. Well, it will heat
any
up.
Any computer can overheat.
Right, and the computers will have better cooling capacity to take care of the extra heat.
Right.
The issue is that they run really cool for their performance.
Yep.
And that's why Apple started using the same Intel dual core chips in their computers.
So okay, yeah, so, I mean, look,
yeah, I'd go for it if I were you, Phil.
All right, so it's not just something the industry threw together.
No, it
is way cool.
It is.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm. I need to talk to you, Dave, about a dual core machine. As a matter of fact,
it's sweet.
Our next caller is Fred from Bergen, New York. Welcome, Fred. What's your question?
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I got a Hewlett Packard Pavilion.
Yep.
And I bought a printer for it.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I had Windows XP Professional installed, I can't get it to do anything.
When you installed XP, did you install the XP drivers for this printer?
I had a fellow come, one of these computer clinic guys came out and did it for me.
Yeah, here's the thing.
He added more RAM and...
Well, that's nice, but if you don't use... Did it work before the upgrade?
Right.
Yeah. If you don't reinstall the
print driver,
the drivers for the printer, you won't get anything out of XP. XP mostly can't use, not fully and often not at all, the old Windows 2000 or Windows whatever 98 drivers. You have to uninstall the drivers and then reinstall the XP specific drivers in order to get most printers to work.
You can go right to the HP website and get the current drivers that will work with HP.
If they have bothered, depending on how old the printer is, if they have bothered to write Windows XP drivers for that printer.
That's kind of weird because I've gone through so many things. When I got online with Hewlett Packard, and they went through my system, and they said everything was working fine. And then I went to the device manager.
Yeah.
And they said all my ports were working fine.
Mm-hmm.
And my speakers are plugged into the USB.
And they work fine. Yeah, I don't think it's a hardware issue at all. I think it's completely a driver issue.
Yeah.
If you were to uninstall the driver entirely and then unplug the printer, uninstall the drivers, plug the printer back in, it'll say, oh, you've got a new printer. Where's the drivers? And you give it the
restart disk. The machine.
Right. Restart the machine, then plug the printer in. It'll say, oh, you got a new printer. Where's the drivers? Then give it the specific XP drivers, whether you have to download them from the net beforehand or they're on the original CD.
One other thing you might want to do is when it's reinstalling, sometimes Windows doesn't always clean up things correctly. When you're installing the HP drivers, it might say, oh, wait a minute, I found this old driver. Do you want to use the existing driver or install new? Always say install new.
And leave the printer. Did you say this was a USB printer or a parallel printer?
It's a USB printer.
Leave the printer unplugged until after the driver is installed.
Oh, so leave it unplugged, okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like I've been doing a lot of stuff wrong. Because the installation disk it came with shows a parallel port connection.
You may need to get an updated driver from the HP website.
Yep.
It may be that the driver you have is only for the parallel port version under XP. So give that a shot and let us know.
We see a lot of that with people upgrading computers. And one of the things you like is, I want to use my old monitor, I want to use my old printer, I want to use my old this, my old that. Sometimes you can't, and it's frustrating.
The biggest thing, though, that's been really porking a lot of people off, though, are scanners.
Yeah.
If they're running Windows 98 or that other beloved system I like, or Windows 2000, the scanner was working fine. Now, all of a sudden, they get, say, a new computer, and they go to hook up their HP scanner, which is, you know, decent name brand, and it won't work.
A lot of the early scanners were parallel, and they don't work because the XP drivers haven't been written. But then for a while, there was a class of scanner that were parallel on the inside and USB on the outside.
Yep.
And those are even harder to get working on newer OSs.
Your worst nightmare come true.
Right.
But
right.
It's a little cheaper that way at the time. Now most everything is pure USB, so you're in a better position.
Right. Right. All right. Our next caller is Harold on a cell phone. Welcome, Harold. What's your question?
How's it, boys?
It's good. How's yours?
Lovely, lovely. Hey, I'm a 58-year-old man that's been drug kicking and screaming in the computer age, and I only have one because I'm a small businessman. But I got this new compact Presario computer, and there's this Norton thing on there, and it keeps coming up on the screen. I'll be in the middle of something, and it'll say Symantec. And it'll say there's an error, and it's got to close the program, and yep. I report the error to yep. Microsoft, and it comes back, and it tells me the check's in the mail. Mm-hmm. We're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of removed this damn Norton,
yep.
and it won't let me remove it.
What do you want to do?
I think they're pretty clever not letting me remove it like that.
What you can do is if it's not in the Ed Remove programs and it's giving you trouble, you can go to the Norton webpage.
I've done that.
And they've got a removal tool.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, there's a removal tool.
Yeah, you're going to support and search for remove Norton.
Yeah.
Do you know which Norton suite it is? Is it just the antivirus or is it one?
It's a Norton, some sort of antivirus. Now, it is on, when I go to remove programs,
mm-hmm.
it is there.
Can you remove it from there, though?
But what it does is it when I go to remove it,
mm-hmm.
it tells me there's a Symantec error.
Okay, yeah, it's messed up. So what you want to do? It's now is this version like 2005 or 2006?
I just bought it, so it's 2006.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Well,
no, he just bought it. He said.
Yeah, but sometimes they put the older versions on because it's cheaper.
It is a 2006.
Okay, what you want to do is there's a it's a NAV. NAV 2006, or it might be, but it's the NAV program, NAV, and then usually the year after it. And it's a removal tool for when, because Norton's noted for this, that's why they had to come up with the utility to get it out, that removing it doesn't always clean everything out, and it leaves a lot of remnants. So they came up with the NAV tool that will literally clean out everything in the programs and in the registry to uninstall it. Once you uninstall it, don't reinstall it.
Oh,
go to our securitytango.com,
mm-hmm.
and there's a product there called AVG by Grisoft. It's an antivirus program, and I would highly recommend using that instead of Norton 2006, because Norton 2006 is well noted for, one, not working right, messing itself up in installing. And the biggest thing is it slows a machine down just about to a crawl because it adds so many other features, as they deem them, on top of it to manage what Windows is already doing.
And one of the other problems that people don't often realize, when you buy a new PC, most of these programs that come bundled with, especially Norton, they're trials.
30 days.
So in 30 days or 60 days, it stops updating the definitions and stops working properly because they want you to buy the full version. But people don't realize that. Now they're unprotected and run into more problems.
Yeah, we've become less than fans of Norton recently. It's still, in many ways, a very good program, but a lot of problems at the moment.
I just posted a link to the new Norton removal tool. They made a new one that uninstalls everything.
Excellent. All right. Looks like Rob Jason is here, so it's time for all the wonderful things you've come to expect from Wham! The news, the weather, the sports, all the good stuff in the mellifluous tones of Rob Jason. And then on the other side of that, we have a whole lot more sound bites with our poll and with all the other nifty and cool things we do. But in the meantime, sit back and relax, because Rob is here to make you both informed and happy. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, back on the other side with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco. Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what happens at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll, I don't even find it on my list. How do you like that? What the heck happened to last week's poll? Wow. All right, last week's poll.
Must have been a 20-foot one.
Must have been a 20-foot poll. Last week's poll, oh, there it is, right up at the top of the list. Of course, where else do you think it would be? Was about sharing media over the internet. Remember, we talked about people being able to do that. 277 of you voted, making it number 172 on the all-time hit list. Big overwhelming choice was never. 54% of you lied and said never. 20% of you said once in a while. 14% of you said of course. And 31 smartneck said, wow, you can do that. This week's poll goes along with some stuff we found in the news about the Windows Genuine Advantage. One of the things that's going on is there's a lawsuit on. A computer user is suing Microsoft Corporation over the Windows Genuine Advantage anti-piracy tool, alleging that it violates laws against spyware. It seeks a class action status for claims that Microsoft did not adequately disclose details of the tool when it delivered it to PC users through the company's automated update system. Microsoft effectively installed the WGA software on consumer systems without providing consumers any opportunity to make an informed choice about that software, the suit alleges.
It just says if you don't install this, your Windows will quit working.
Yeah. Exactly. A Microsoft spokesman shockingly called the suit baseless and disputed the characterization of the tool as spyware. Spyware is deceptive software that is installed on a user's computer without the user's consent and has some malicious purpose, which clearly has nothing to do with the Windows Genuine Advantage software. It says Windows Genuine Advantage is installed with the consent of the user and seeks only to notify the user if a proper license is not in place. On the other hand, Microsoft did issue a software update this week that addressed some of those concerns. The suit deals with one of the software industry's most controversial issues: the circumstances under which companies should be able to deliver programs to computers and what they must disclose to PC users when they do. So that's what this week's poll is about. Did you install the Windows Genuine Advantage voluntarily? And the choices, of course, are yes, no, I had no choice, I have no idea, the Linux and the Macintosh.
Wait a minute.
Shouldn't that be yes, I had no choice?
Yeah.
And aren't they kind of backtracking from the previous story that now they get the link to remove that?
No, the old version is removable. The new version is not.
The pilot version, they call it.
Right. Right. So basically the question is, did you in fact install the Windows, for those of you who did install the Windows Genuine Advantage, did you do it voluntarily? So far, 80 of you have voted. 26% of you said you have no idea. That would be no. 25% of you said no. 21% of you said yes. Yes, you voluntarily installed the Windows Genuine Advantage, which is interesting.
Well, generally, people just click on whatever pops up, which is how a lot of spyware gets installed in the first place.
Right, right.
Yeah, they never take time to read what they're agreeing to.
Yeah, so you get this little pop-up from Microsoft saying these Windows updates are available. Do you want to install them now or later?
Right, exactly, exactly. Not do you not want to install them, just when do you want to install them, now or later? When you're done with taking the poll, look at underneath it. You'll see a yellowish box. Click on the link that said, give us your opinion. It takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
You ain't kidding, baby. All right, once you're there, you can leave an actual opinion about the poll rather than just having to live with the yes or no or maybe your I don't know choice. You can actually now leave some text. The opinion question is, how do you feel about the Windows Genuine Advantage? And keep it clean. So far, we've got 13 people who have, in fact, managed to keep it clean. I'm very impressed by that.
It's early yet. You just put it out.
I'll delete them if they. I don't care. I'm not here to make your life miserable. And then come on back to check out Ask Nick while you're there. I'll admit it. I think it's a great website. Lots of neat stuff: reviews, newsletters, the forums. You have to be a member to get to some of those, but. There's a lot of neat stuff and a lot of nifty people. And then come back to our website at soundbites.org. Check out the context, the links, the FAQs, and of course the forums where the niftiest people on earth hang out. And of course, shop. We don't talk enough about the Soundbite Shop. Look at that. On the Soundbite Shop, you can buy T-shirts and hats and thongs and all kinds of wonderful things.
But going back just for one second, though.
Okay.
On your website, you should tell folks about the advantage, because you were saying that they got to be a member. What else they get for the membership of being part of Ask Nick?
Well, all right, if you insist.
You gave a half of a statement. You should explain some of the other features.
All right.
For the
folks. You join Ask Nick, you get the following things. You get my newsletter 3 times a week with tips, tricks, rants and raves, websites, nifty things to do. I answer a question every time. You get that 3 times a week. You also get access to the forums where I answer questions, and other people also jump in and answer questions. So there's lots of nifty stuff that happens on the website. The newsletter has been lots of fun. This week we already talked about the red pill, blue pill thing. We talked about there are some pretty nifty websites, one for removing their spyware, a little tour of Vista. We talked about Stream Ripper. We talked about MacGyver. There's a site on the web that talks all about all the things that MacGyver built.
I love his new commercial. You know,
MacGyver's been off. Richard Dean Anderson's
Richard
commercial.
Right? He's been off. MacGyver's been off for 20 years, and he's even almost retired from Stargate. Although there's rumors he's coming back for season 10.
Right.
And he does a MacGyver commercial.
Right.
For MasterCard.
Yep.
All right. So that's the stuff that you thank you. That's the stuff you get at Ask Nick. Whether you like to or not, I guess, is how that works. But in the meantime, we're back here, and we're going to go to Steve somewhere near Buffalo. Steve apparently is in an undisclosed location somewhere near Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Well, I'm in Blaisdell, New York. It's really part of Orchard Park area there.
Yeah, I know where that is.
From the, you know, that's where the freeway exit is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Orchard Park.
Cool. What's your question?
Anyways, I've been trying to install Firefox on my new Gateway 64-bit computer, and it has an NVIDIA GeForce 6100 video card on it, and some reason it's cutting off part of the EULA box where you have to check the yes, I agree or don't agree, or in order to finish installing Firefox, and it's cut off that little checkbox part of the window. And I don't know.
Does this happen with anything else or just with Firefox?
I noticed that earlier with a couple of other applications, but I didn't associate it with possibly being a problem with the video card.
What resolution are you running your video at? 640 by 480, 800 by 600?
I have a 23-inch flat panel screen, so it's at 1040 by...
Here's the problem. And, of course, this continues to be a problem with 64-bit Windows in general. The 64-bit driver for NVIDIA is still in beta. And until they fix it,
you're not going to be able to.
There's not much that anybody can do.
It's so new that, you know, you're one of the pioneers, and you're the one that getting the arrows in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to say
that. Because you beta test it for them.
Right now, most of the drivers are for 64-bit. The 64-bit drivers are unfortunately still beta.
I have the regular Windows Media Pro XP operating system on the computer right now. It's not the 64-bit version.
Well, then make sure that the NVIDIA, when it loaded, did not install the 64-bit driver.
Don't you have to load Windows 64 on a 64-bit computer?
You don't have to, no.
Mm-hmm.
That surprises me it would work.
Yeah, well, yes.
Well, apparently it doesn't.
Well, it works pretty well, and I have, you know, like my CAD programs loaded on, and they seem to work. But, you know, just in a couple applications I tried loading on, for some reason, maybe, you know, the window size, you know, in those you know, applications there were written so that they're ambiguous about what their size should be. You know, it seems to cut off part of the windows and when you're trying to install them.
Yeah, it's like it's displaying the image too large for your screen. And it used to be that was like you had a 20-inch monitor set to 640 by 480, and all the websites and installer programs are now assuming 8x6 minimum, and most of them are 1024 by 768 to be able to see anything on the screen.
Right. Now, did you say that you had this thing set to 640 by 480?
He started saying 1024 something.
Yeah, because he's got 1024 by 768.
On a 20-inch machine, 1024 is really, really low. 20 inches is usually 1600.
Well, it may also be that there's two ways you can set the desktop. One is the actual physical image on the screen.
Scrolling down.
And then the other is what's called a virtual desktop, which can be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
When most systems install and they have some sort of dialog box, they center that on the desktop. So if you're only seeing part of the desktop, you may well miss
everything at the bottom.
The stuff at the bottom. So in the driver,
well, what you're supposed to be able to do is move your cursor down to the bottom of the screen
and
the whole
scroll.
Screen shifts up. So if you've got your screen set to 1024 by 768, but the monitor is set to 1600 by 1200, that could be why you're missing half the screen.
Right.
So go into your display control panel and make sure that the screen size and the display size are the same.
Right. Exactly. All right. Give that a try and let us know. Our next caller, world famous. Oh, what are you doing?
What, you want to do that one?
I want to take guy. I want to take the guy in Georgia.
Okay.
Long distance call. We should take the guy in Georgia. World famous film producer Angelo Mancuso on the line with us right now. Welcome, Angelo. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
Oh, doing fantastic. Well, you know, you and I spoke yesterday evening.
Right.
And had some really good success with the people at Apple in regard to Disc Warrior.
Well, we should back up a step in that.
You will.
You were transferring data from you're down there shooting a movie, and you
That's
were
right.
transferring digital images, digital movie from your camera to a backup hard drive, and the power went out in the hotel room.
I guess you have to start adding a battery backup UPS to your kit.
We've already talked about that.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And then the whole thing wouldn't come up, and you got this error message. So you talked to the folks at Apple.
We've got Disc Warrior coming. We're going to have it tomorrow in our hands. Evidently, the directory structure is broken down. They tell me that the files are probably still good. They feel about 95 or 99% that I won't have any problem with my files.
Yeah, the directory on even Mac or Windows keeps track of where all your files are. It's like the card catalog in the library. Anyone remember libraries?
Yeah. So I was just that one the other day.
If the directory gets messed up, all your files are still there, but the computer doesn't know where to find them. And Disc Warrior is a really, really good program for the Mac to rebuild your directory. It doesn't try to repair the directory like some of the other tools. It just builds a new one. It looks across your hard drive, builds a new directory. And it does a very good job at fixing flashing question mark problems because it can't find the disk to boot from, where the drive won't mount on your disk because it can't read the directory. It's a very, very good tool to use.
And apparently you spoke to the folks at Apple themselves, and they said this is what you need.
Yeah, I talked to one of the techs, and he said to me that there was actually one other product, but that the Disc Warrior was infallible, in his words. He said that he's thrown everything but the kitchen sink at it, and he's not found a problem that couldn't fix.
Cool.
The one thing... There are many other tools. There's a tech tool from Micromat. Norton has discontinued their utility suite for the Macintosh so they can concentrate on their antivirus suite. So there's a couple of other tools. In fact, TechTool has this cool flash drive that comes with a bootable OS and all the tools on it. You plug it into your Mac and boot from it. So the Disc Warrior can repair a damaged directory from a good hard drive with good files on it. If you have damaged files, there's another program called Data Rescue that can try to rescue damaged files on a good hard drive with a good directory.
Well, that is good to know, Steve. We'll keep that in the back of our hat there just in case.
Yep. Although I shouldn't be giving away all my tech secret tips. I won't be the miracle worker anymore.
Right, right.
Well, when I get back from Cordial, Georgia from this movie shoot, there is a quad Mac that I am going to be looking at. I'm going to come to you, Steve. I'm going to do the purchase of it and a 30-inch monitor. So
yep.
Looking forward to cutting my movie on.
Yeah, that's pretty typical for video production.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
we'll talk about twin 30s too.
Yeah,
depending on the budget. Yeah,
I so want one of those 30-inch monitors. No way I'm ever going to afford it, but I so want one. Well, all right, Angela, I'm glad that things look like they're in the process of working out, because I know how important that individual's thing was to you. So I'm delighted
right.
that you got that.
Thanks, Nick. I just want to call and say thank you and give you the follow-up on that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. We have followers all over the world. Even when they're traveling, they come and talk to us. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers, but then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
Let's come
and
back.
And 24 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Let's come back for Sean's program and insult him.
Yeah exactly. You know, really, truly, it is so lucky that you people cannot hear what goes on during the
break.
During the breaks, because...
Oh, you stop it. It's very boring between the segments.
Maybe
yeah, that's the
wrong
word I would have used. Absolutely. All right. Again, on the Microsoft front, a recent email update from a member of Microsoft's legal department indicates that Microsoft is bracing for a potential $2.5 million per day fine. Microsoft may soon be charged $2.5 million every day for allegedly flouting the European Union's demand to provide documentation about Microsoft's inner workings. As you know, the EU already levied a $628 million fine against Microsoft in 2004 because they ruled that Microsoft needs to tell them what's going on inside Microsoft, or they can't, you know, let the software run in the European Union.
Well, then they tell them to put the fine where the sun don't shine and say goodbye.
Well, then they leave Europe. The European Commission is set to meet on July 3rd to discuss with the member countries what it should do next in the Microsoft matter. On the 10th of July, Microsoft is expected to rule on how much of an additional fine, if any, any Microsoft should be required to pay for allegedly failing to comply with the antitrust conditions stipulated in 2004. Microsoft says they've been working tirelessly to comply with the EC's terms. If in fact that happens, if in fact the European Union does charge them $2.5 million a day, it will be retroactive to the 15th of December 2005, which means that as of today, that's been 199 days, they would owe $497,500,000 just in those fines.
$500 million, no big deal.
Half, for them, that's chump change.
Yeah, but
that's,
I mean,
like, that's
hello,
rounding error for Microsoft.
Wait a minute. You know, them demanding that they got to disclose stuff. Where do they get off thinking that they've got the right to do that?
Well, because they now, make the they, laws for their countries.
Yeah, but they're buying, though, somebody else's product. And that product...
And they're saying that because they took them... It's the same idea. They took them to court for antitrust. Microsoft lost the case, and the European Union said, in order to comply with the antitrust verdict, you need to do this. And Microsoft hasn't done it.
Well, that's one of the problems with a world economy, is what's legal in one country is illegal in another country.
Right. And the reality is, you know what? You can complain all you want, but if you're going to do business in a country, You work under the laws, and you work to change the laws if you don't like them. But you don't just say, I'm not going to follow your laws, because then the country has the right to say, take a hike.
Well, that's Apple's running
yeah,
into the same
problem
in
Yeah, but they
want
to turn
France.
Around, though, mm-hmm. and find out what's doing, so they can give take part of that technology and pass it on to third-party vendors. Now, hello, that's kind of taking away from protecting your product. That's well, the, like if I buy something.
Look,
and then
I understand
somebody...
all that, but the reality is that Microsoft has to either get the laws changed or stop selling in that country
I'd
or
stop
comply.
Selling, stop
Those
selling
are the three choices.
And
well,
then I go
they
after
haven't
them
made
for,
that decision yet.
For turning around.
The problem is it's all of Europe.
Yeah, because,
it's not just
because
one
the
country.
EU merged, you know, the European Union now, all these countries together have gotten together.
Right.
But do they all buy into
right,
this?
Right, and Microsoft so. And Apple is facing the same problem strictly in France. France has said that Microsoft that Apple's iTunes downloads the, must work with everything, not just iPods.
Now, I want to see the same law come down that Microsoft's digital rights management must work with all products, including the iPod.
Because I agree with
Microsoft
you.
Microsoft has not licensed it to Apple, so you can't use protected WMAs on your iPod.
Right.
Now,
I
Apple has
agree.
Licensed their FairPlay technology to Motorola because you can play iTunes songs on some Motorola phones.
Right. Right.
So, you know, Apple has the same choice. They have to change iTunes to remove the DRM, or they can stop selling music in France.
Right. Right. That's really the way it works. It's the same way here in the United States. If you don't like the laws, move. Yeah.
They were able to petition
or change them. Or change,
yeah, yeah. Right
well,
change
and that's Apple was able to petition the French government. So now there's a well, it sounds like a sneaky little clause that if a company can prove they'd be damaged by releasing their software code,
right.
then they don't have to.
Right, that's kind of nice. But you know the problem is the rules change when you become a monopoly. And that's been true all through history. The reality is either don't become a monopoly or be prepared to deal with it. It's not like the rules are new. These are the rules that have been in place ever since the robber barons of the 19th century. Microsoft knew that these things were there when they decided to become to attempt to become a monopoly. And
see,
they should have known that when they got there, these things were going to come into play and
everyone,
they needed to deal with them.
Everyone wants to be a monopoly, just not an illegal one.
Right, 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 right.
So where's how do you define that? Oh, we can sell to everybody, but don't make us an illegal monopoly.
Well, you have certain monopolies, like, for example, certain utility companies are a monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's going to run a second set of pipes to your house for natural gas or whatever. And that's a monopoly in the sense that only one company owns all those. But it's one of those monopolies like, well, I guess if you really wanted to buy the right of way, assuming everybody would sell it to you and dig it up, you could.
Yeah. Well, that was one thing I was always upset about back in the early days of cell phones. Each cell phone company had to build their own towers.
Right.
And so the network ranges were very small and they didn't grow very
right.
fast. And now as soon as actually they started merging their companies together and buying each other, now they can grow really fast. Yeah, I remember right. back in the olden days where I couldn't call Buffalo because that was a different network.
Right.
Oh, shut up.
Right,
Rob.
Oh, wham, wham.
Me and Dan,
wham.
We both look at each other and we hear the olden days. Back in the olden days.
Back in the olden, old 10 country. Years
you
ago.
Puppies.
I
you,
remember my cell phone was 10
puppies.
Pounds.
I've got
Go
socks
back
older
to
than
sucking
you.
Sucking the bottle and leave
both.
The adults to talk.
Well, I'll suck
Go
the bottle
back to
and
the kitty.
Hit the
yeah,
off
yeah,
button
right.
here if you're not careful.
Go back to the kitty table and have your little peanuts and M&Ms and leave the adults to talk.
Take your little nap.
Heaven's sake.
Reruns of Bob Lonsberry on the way next.
Yeah. All right. Just to make everybody else happy, we'll go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Jack from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Yeah, I'm running Firefox, and many times, not always, when I go to a website, it comes back and says it can't find it, and I have to retry it a second time, and then it finds it.
Okay.
And it's more annoying than anything
yeah.
else. But.
I've been seeing that a lot with everything, with browsers, with anything that goes out to the internet. I've been seeing this problem. It appears that the internet is full. It's incredibly busy. There is so much spam. There is so much stuff going on. People are shooting videos all over the place. The internet is really full.
Okay.
When you go, there are two internets, you know. There's Internet 1, which you're on, and Internet 2, which I'm on at RIT.
Mm-hmm.
Internet 2 is
swine.
Pretty good. Swine. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bigger pipe.
Whenever I go to Internet 2, I'm pretty clean still because it's designed to be the next generation. Eventually, everybody will get Internet 2. Mm-hmm. But Internet 1 was designed back in the days when a fast connection was 56K and everything everybody was sending was text only.
I know what you mean. I was running computers back since 1960. Phil.
See? The puppies in the other room are going, there was a 60 in the 19s? Stop. Just shut up and punch the buttons. But the reality is that the internet is full, and we're working on getting the...
yeah, 1 second left.
Yeah, 1 second left. The reality is that it's full, and there's a lot of collisions and a lot of problems, and there's bad stuff going on all over the place. In addition to all the junk people are sending themselves, you know, how many times do you get in the mail the same 8 gig funny, cute little video that every single person you know had to send you? That takes a lot of disk space. It takes a lot of bandwidth, too. And when one person says, oh, what a cute video of a puppy, and they send it to 200 of their closest friends, the internet gets plugged up.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it happens, and I wish it didn't, but it does.
Okay, then. Well,
I would like to see Firefox do a little bit better job of caching old websites, but other than that, there's not much that can be done until... everybody upgrades to the latest and best.
Okay, then.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jack. The internet is full.
Go home.
Go away. Our next caller is Nick from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Nick. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have this problem, and it's a domestic problem. My wife wants to download a game from Pogo.com so she can play it. I've researched it on Google.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find any negative, malicious things.
No, Pogo's okay.
But a lot of times you can't download their games. You have to play them online.
Well, you have to download the bits and pieces that
live on
your hard drive.
Well, there's a number of them, though. What's that one? It's different puzzle games. Pogo's fine. I've used it before. A few games for my grandchildren.
Okay.
And it's really cute, and they're good games.
Okay, great. Because I wasn't sure. I try to follow all your recommendations all the time and run Spybot, Adware, and all that, and clean up the computer as best I can. I have.
Well, I will tell you that it's very likely that Pogo is doing some sort of checking up on you, how many people have downloaded it, where they go, what they do, how they play it. But nobody's told us anything about them doing anything else. Just as it relates to their stuff.
Don't have to worry about
anything. No. In fact, it didn't even put in any spyware.
There you go.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Oh, great. That's
at least the games that I put on for the grandchildren.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Well, thank you, and keep up the good work, gentlemen. You do a fine job. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you so much. I wonder if he knows we're not on all the time. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes at 36 minutes after the hour with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lint, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Well, we're moving on now.
We're moving on
to the east side.
He was just in town.
He was. He was up at the racetrack.
Yeah, signing autographs and what, gave away some money or something?
Yeah. George Nick, what was your favorite television show from the 80s?
Mine?
From the 80s?
Yeah, that's right.
80s?
Well, I mean, you know, this age range of the Jeffersons. Or 70s.
They were 70s.
NYPD
Blue.
They were
the 70s.
Yeah. I wasn't born in the 70s.
I was still dealing with issues from the 60s. So I didn't watch a lot of television. At least I wasn't aware. I'm not sure what I saw was on television. I didn't have a lot. I don't know. I was
back
not a
in
big,
the 50s.
So you know, it was a very confusing time for you, right?
It was a very confusing time. Saturday Night Live, certainly.
But back in the 50s, my two favorites were Superman and Lloyd Bridges in Sea Hunt.
And then
wasn't Lloyd Bridges an airplane?
It. Hmm?
Yes.
Yeah.
But he had a career before that.
Oh, okay.
Lloyd Bridges
he
and
did
Leslie
a TV
Nielsen,
series, a weekly series. It was called Sea Hunt.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. TV, you know, it was a little small screen back in those days.
Sure.
You had
and,
to get up
and, we had
and
Skipper
turn
Sam locally,
the channel.
The great Skipper Sam.
There were only three channels.
Captain Kangaroo.
Yeah.
Remember when you actually sat down with your family as an event every Halloween to watch The Wizard of Oz, because it was only on once a year.
Charlie Brown I had Christmas.
And then the year we discovered that most of the movie was in color. Who the heck knew that?
One program, I don't know if you remember it, but I had to prove it to a friend because I found it on the internet, was Winky Dink.
I loved Winky Dink. I got in so much trouble over Winky Dink. Winky Dink had this great thing where you'd put a piece of plastic.
Nick, there's kids listening.
Yes.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You'd put a piece of plastic.
It was for kids.
Put a piece of plastic on the screen and they'd be like, oh, Winky Dink needs to get away from the dog. Draw a ladder going over the fence so Winky Dink can go up the ladder. And you'd draw with your crayon on this thing and Winky Dink would escape. The problem is I always forgot to put the plastic over the TV.
And the screen and the crayons would melt.
How are the passengers doing?
I won't deceive you, Mr. Stryker.
Here we go.
We're running out of time.
Surely there must be something you can do.
I'm doing everything I can. Now stop calling me Shirley.
That's actually Leslie Nielsen.
Yep.
Lloyd Bridges.
Lloyd Bridges and Leslie Nielsen both were leading actors, and especially Leslie Nielsen.
Yep.
When he did these airplane and police academy or police story movie, he's remembered as this comedic actor, and that's not how he started.
Yeah, he started out as in he did a lot of westerns.
Forbidden
he was the
Planet
bad guy in a lot of westerns,
night.
Actually. Yeah. All right, our next call. We might as well go back and do this. Our next caller is Bill from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
I had a little problem with the computer here. Error loading Explorer EXE.
That's probably a feature.
You must reinstall Windows, it says. And then there's an OK sign, and then it'll...
Explorer.exe is the name of the program that creates the desktop.
What version of Windows are you using?
98.
Yeah, pretty much the only way around that is to reinstall Windows.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's absolutely true. So you need to get out your original CD.
Hold on one moment. I might be able to work them around one other thing. All right, Windows 98, if you go and reboot and get to a C prompt.
Yes.
All right. And if you type in at the C prompt, scan disk.
Okay.
C / restore. C:// restore. It will bring up a, is that the right one? Oh, no. I take that back. I got to go backwards. Try to remember.
It's hard.
Yeah. Check disk, C:// restore is the command. And what it'll do is it'll bring you up a screen, and it keeps a history of the previous, say, 3 or 4 times that it booted successfully.
Yes.
It's like the restore in Windows XP. You can select one of those dates.
It's sort of what we were talking about earlier. It keeps a new directory.
Yeah,
and loads that
directory. And it will remember, I think it's like 3 or 4 of them. You can select, say, like the oldest one. Select that and reboot and see if that gets you back into Windows 98.
Very good.
Okay? Otherwise, you're going to have to install Windows 98 over Windows 98.
All right.
Right? And it won't lose anything. You know, I mean, all your email and all your programs and all that still remain. It's just copying over files. So you got 2 options.
But of course, the next thing you'll do, Bill, is back up, right?
Of course.
Exactly. All right. Thanks for calling. Our next caller is Dar in Toronto. I'm sorry, what?
Is someone still using 98?
Some people still are.
Yep.
Our next caller is Dar in Toronto. Welcome, Dar. What's your question?
Hi. Great program as always, gentlemen.
Thank you.
That fellow that called in with the ME, slow ME, and he's running Firefox. You might recall a couple of versions ago of Firefox, there was one of them was using so many resources, so much CPU power that it slowed everything down. He might look into that if he went into, what do you guys, the task manager?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Excellent thought, Dar. So, Carl, if you're still listening, your system is slow. If it only happens when you're running Firefox, check that you're running a newer version, a new enough version.
I think he said it was happening to a lot of things, and that's when we got into asking him, well, what else do you have running down in the taskbar? And he said, Oh, probably about 7 to 9 items.
Right. But that's a good catch, Darla.
Yeah,
Thank you so much.
It's another thing to look at.
I appreciate that. See, this is my favorite part, when our listeners call up and they tell us what's wrong with the system.
Yeah, we'll do this.
All right, our next caller is Brian from Caledonia, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Oh, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have AOL, and my wife is noticing that she's getting these bounce backs for emails that she never sent. And
someone
also,
you know, has a virus, and it is sending that virus in her name.
Okay, there's also something where in her address book there's addresses that she's never put in.
When
so I don't know if that's related.
It's not necessarily related, but what can happen is when you reply to a message that has come in, some mail programs and AOL can do it too, will remember all of the other messages or all the other addresses in that message, because you reply to the first one, it figures you might want to reply to some of the other ones too. What can happen is if you're on a large mailing list, you can get a message from hundreds of people, and those addresses can get put into your address book as a previous recipient.
I should try to figure out if I could turn that off. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
But,
all right, well.
The first problem is likely someone you know has a virus, and it's sending it in your wife's name, and so when the other end bounces back undeliverable addresses, it comes back to your wife because that's who the virus is sending it as.
Right, and that way the person who has the virus doesn't get them and doesn't think they have a virus.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure what I can do about it, but...
Well, you can write to all your friends and tell them to dance the security tango. That's really about it.
Yep.
Okay.
I got to tell you, I went and saw Jiva, the production they got on right now, five guys named Mo.
Yeah.
And one of the actors, though, because we go to the prologue, didn't know that the town of Caledonia was here in New York State. So we had to tell him, because they do in the show, they actually had, you know, they were singing it and had the audience participate.
Caledonia.
Yeah.
Caledonia. What makes your big head so hard?
Well, they'd say Caledonia, we had to say what?
Yeah.
And then Caledonia, what? And then he'd say, what makes your hair so high? And you go, and you had to raise your hands and go, mop.
Yep. But he didn't know it was about our Caledonia. He thought it was about the one in Greece.
Yeah, he didn't realize. He goes, I got to go check that town out.
All right.
Our clients in Caledonia.
You go through it, though, pretty quick.
Yeah, pretty quick. Depends on, well, the way you drive, absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. We're,
I don't need to see it. I've seen it.
Boom. Yeah, exactly. Right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Now you can't blow up
Andy
Griffith.
Funniest moment on Happy Days. Robin Williams as Mork from Ork, sitting and watching television just before Richie comes home, stands up, turns off the television, and said, that Opie, what an actor. All right, we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
How many people remember that Mork and Mindy was a spinoff of Happy Days?
Yes, it was.
I always liked Pam Dauber.
Sure you did.
Jonathan Winters, that really killed the show.
Oh, I love Jonathan Winters.
Jonathan Winters, but it killed the show.
Oh, man, I love Jonathan Winters. I had to stop wearing my rainbow stripe suspenders when that show came on. Everybody thought, oh, look, Mork suspenders. I've been wearing these suspenders for 20 years. I had to stop. I was very, very sad. Did you know that Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams own the houses next door to each other? And every morning they have coffee on the little stone fence between their houses? Wouldn't you just love to be sitting there
listening to conversation?
Actually, it's probably incredibly dull. They're the only two people on earth that neither one of them has to prove anything for.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get back to the phones, we've talked a lot about the WGA thing, Windows Genuine Advantage software. There's a new worm out that pretends to be the WGA and says you should be installing it. It shuts, if you do, it shuts off the Windows firewall, downloads new malicious programs, does all the bad stuff, and you get it through, hey, here's a surprise, AOL's Instant Messenger. So if somebody says they're sending you the Windows Genuine Advantage program through AOL, just say no. And yes, we talked about this earlier. Microsoft is delaying Office 2007. It looks like it really won't be out until at least 2007. They were going to launch it in January, and now it's going to be later, possibly much later. And that's all the additions. The Office Professional Plus, the Office Enterprise, the Office Home, the Office Student, the Office Professional, the Office Small Business, the Office Standard, and the Office Ultimate Edition.
Which is getting later and later because the currently shipping version of Office is 2003.
Right.
See, that's the bad. A lot of companies have gone through the version number and the year numbers. You know, it's nice to know that this office is from 2003 and we don't have to remember it's version 12. But now that it's 2006, almost 2007, it's getting really old. But if it was 12, we wouldn't know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Our next caller is Justin from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Justin. What's your question?
I got a question about downloading. I always hear about people getting caught downloading from peer-to-peer software, but yeah. I never hear about downloading from news groups. How come?
I'm sorry.
Not many people know that news groups exist.
Can you get caught as easily from downloading?
Yes, absolutely. See, here's the problem with downloading from anywhere, Justin. How does this stuff get to you?
Yeah, you have to go get it.
Well, you have to go get it. And when you say, download this to me, you have to tell them where you are.
Right.
That's how they get you. They know where you are now.
Well, I wasn't sure because a lot of the news groups that you would subscribe to claim that they offer their client protection where they won't tell anyone who you are. And I don't know if that's...
They don't have to tell anyone. Everybody already knows.
Okay.
It's real easy to figure out who's downloading what. It's got to be in the log. Trust me, I've run P2P news groups and I've run P2P and I've run news groups. And the logs always tell you who downloaded what from where. And if I were a music company, I would just have to subpoena the provider and say, send me your logs, and they have you.
So
that was Apple just found out.
So the government more or less could go to these companies and say, you know, give us your entire log, and they could go after every one of their clients.
Absolutely. Right.
The peer-to-peer groups are much more popular and more well-known, so that's why they're being targeted. But the news groups have the same problem. Although Apple just found out because they sued an internet provider to get the name of someone who leaked confidential company information and were denied because how they do it. They didn't go through other avenues first. You're supposed to look through your network and internal investigations before you go right to a lawsuit.
Right. That's a little different in this particular case because there's nothing on their internal networks when it's the RIAA.
Yeah.
But yes, you can. If you download that stuff, there's a record of that somewhere, and they just have to find it.
The problem I always had with news groups is you know, a simple, you know, 2 or 3 minute movie clip is, you know, 20 parts, and part 7 is missing.
Right. Yeah. Always. Yes.
All right, well, thanks a lot, guys.
Sorry, Justin, but the reality is there is no way you cannot hide. Mm-hmm. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of man? It's the RIAA.
In order for the computer to send you information, it has to know where and who you are.
It's like saying, well, they can't, you know, I ordered something illegal through the mail, and I got it delivered by the mailman or UPS. They'll never find me. Well, you had to put an address down to get the thing. Uh-huh. The same thing is true on the internet. You have an address.
Yeah, I've heard about police officers that keep UPS and FedEx uniforms on hand to make these deliveries when they know people are there. And then they can catch them in the act of receiving stolen property.
I wouldn't know anything about that, I'm sure. But the reality is that this is the sort of thing that trips people up. At some point, you have to give them your address or you can't get the file. Even if you download it to an intermediary and then download it from the intermediary to you, that intermediary has the log. And it used to be that there were places on the net you could go to that wiped out their logs every couple of minutes, so they never kept track. The government has sued most of, not the government, but places like the RIAA and the MPAA have sued most of them out of existence. So even places that say you're safe with them, you're really not necessarily.
There used to be these anonymous redirectors in Finland until the Finnish government got involved.
Right. The problem is it is a global economy now, and it's real easy for one company or for one country to say, you don't help us. If you're not playing ball with us, we're not playing ball with you. And they cave.
Well, that's the International Burn Convention, that we'll respect your copyrights if you respect ours. So if someone in Finland steals something here, we can sue them.
Right.
If someone in the U.S. steals something from Finland, you can sue them.
Right. When I was much younger, in the 70s, let's call it, I was residing for a while in a state I will not name, but they did not have reciprocity with New York. That is to say, if I got a speeding ticket there,
it stayed there.
It didn't count. I won't say I took advantage of that, but I was always aware that I could, certainly. Not that I ever did or needed to, of course. All right, it looks like we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Call in next week earlier and more often. We'll be back next week. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and Rob Linton on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.